thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Ray Jeezy, Will T, part of sportsjourney.com. So make sure you check us out at sportsjourney.com. You'll find all kinds of sports content, especially for your DMV sports teams. What's going on, fellas?
Nothing much, man. Nothing much. How are you?
I'm good, man. You know, just another Tuesday, bro. What's going on, Ray Jeezy?
Go watch the debates tonight. Listen to the Urban Sports Team. Our debates will be far better, I promise.
Debates start at 9.
It's 9. So, yeah, we'll be.
We'll see. Like, I'm watching it. We'll see. He's getting it right. Like, I'm watching it.
I'm getting right. I'm about to go to Taco Bell during the break.
Are you Nacho? Wait, time out. Wait a minute. Is this what he happened to Will
right.
T?
I'm getting right.
Get that. Right? It's like fight night, right, Will?
Yeah, I'm getting right. It's like fight night to me. This is like Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury.
Oh man.
I don't know what we're gonna get. You know, it's an
Tyson. It's like Tyson Roy Jones, bro.
Tyson Roy Jones.
Oh god.
Listen, we don't know. We know who we want to win, but we don't know what's going to go down, man. So, yeah.
Some real stuff, yeah. Man. You know what I'm saying? Is Kanye in the debate? He ain't in there? They ain't invite Kanye?
Nah, no Kanye.
Dang, man.
Just Sleepy Joe and McDonald, you know?
Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and Google Play. Search the Urban Sports Scene. Tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Will T.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
All right, here's what we have on tap. We'll talk about the Washington football team falling to the Cleveland Browns 34-20, and we'll preview their next game against the Baltimore Ravens at 8:20. We'll preview the NBA finals between the Lakers and the Heat. Also, Doc Rivers not returning to the Clippers at 8:40. Boxing expert Johnny Signorella will join the show to talk about the Charlo Twins winning over the weekend. Finally, we'll make our NFL Week 4 and Survivor picks. But first, Sunday, the Washington football team fell to the Cleveland Browns 34-20. What did you see out there on Sunday? Whoever wants to take it, take the shot.
I'll take it, Kevin, I guess. What I saw, I saw regression, or I saw regression from Dwayne Haskins. Mm-hmm. One of the things that, you know, that you heard in the mainstream media and you heard amongst us is, yes, he has a live arm. He probably have one of the strongest arms we've seen in this organization since Robert Griffin III, but he tends to stare down his target too much. And he also has problems pre-snap reading the defense and knowing exactly where he wants to go with the ball. So those are a couple things that really troubled him this past Sunday, especially with the injuries along the offensive line. And like I mentioned, like we mentioned last week, you know, they had two dynamic pass rushers, which is Sheldon Richardson and Myles Garrett, who were able to get to Dwayne Haskins and made him speed up his throws and not be able to follow through.
Ray?
I saw the obvious, which primarily hinges on the fact that only a historically good defense, such as, you know, the 2000 Ravens or the 85 Bears, can overcome five turnovers in a game, let alone on the road, you know what I mean? However, in spite of the turnovers, there was a vast improvement in terms of offensive play calling, which I feel was a primary contributor to leading at multiple times. I mean, they led to start the game. They scored first. And they were able to overcome a sizable deficit. So I feel as though Scott Turner is improving.
Yeah.
And another thing I just want to add, something that probably no one's really mentioned, I think the key difference, one of the key difference makers for the Cleveland Browns was a guy by the name of Wyatt Teller, who was the right guard along that offensive line. If you notice, when Cleveland really got that run game going in the third quarter, I think it was their second or third drive, It was Wyatt Teller coming around and making those kickout blocks so Nick Chubb can get to the second and third level.
Mm-hmm.
And really get that running game going.
They definitely, you know, they imposed their will on the Washington football team's defense. And in the beginning of the game, they couldn't find anything. Who was doing the game? I want to say it was Spielman, right? Was Chris Spielman? I think Chris Spielman was doing
Chris Spielman.
And he was referring to like the cutback lanes being open. He said Chubbs missed it the first time. And then he got to it. I guess I want to say down the line he got to it. And he scored a touchdown off of it. But to like everybody's saying, I think
you
those turnovers.
You mean to tell me you didn't listen?
Go ahead. Go ahead, Wilty.
You mean to tell me you didn't listen to the game on the radio?
No, I don't listen to the radio, man. I listen to them dudes. I actually like Chris Spielman. I was a fan of him when he was a football player. Just to like the turnovers, man, and like, and I think I'm seeing a little bit of regression with Dwayne Haskins as a passer right now. Which I've always said that usually this guy gets better every game. Now, granted, I'm with Ray. I felt like there were more open targets, and you can contribute that to Scott Turner and his play calling. I know I was pretty hard on him last week, calling him trash, but he improved, man. Like, he looked good. I'm not putting this game on Scott Turner. I think this game is solid. It's totally on Dwayne Haskins, and it's put up a shut up, man. You got a dude that has been on social media, you know, putting his swag out, and then when you come on Sundays, you ain't playing the same way. So you know, and it's like, all right, you know, it gets to a point where you just gotta, you know, just really hone in and focus on what you got to do in the task at hand, because the team, like the Browns, only scored to get that lead off turnovers. It wasn't like they were driving the length of the field. They had issue driving towards the length of the field against that defense till that defense got tired. So it's like, all right, you turn the ball over, you put that defense in a bad situation, which, you know, once they got the pick, they were already in Washington football team territory. So it's now like, all right, Dwayne, you got to step up, because you don't step up, man, like, you won't have a job.
Well, let me ask you this. I know we consistently talk about putting the defense in a good situation where, you know, you aren't turning the ball over deep within your opponent's
territory,
deep within their own side of the field, mm-hmm. right? Or their opponent. Mm-hmm. I forgot which the term is.
Yeah. I say territory. That's
but what's to say that, you know, we pump up this defense. You know, I'm not saying we, rather the fans pumped up this defense the first week of the season with the 7 to 8 sacks against the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah.
And we talked about the five first round picks along that defensive line,
mm-hmm.
and how this was an improved secondary and linebacking core.
Yeah.
With Jack Del Rio, this is a much better defense all around. If this truly is a great defense, as we say they are, wouldn't they be able to get those stops?
I mean,
what you think?
No, look at Baker Mayfield.
They'd be able to get those stops?
All right, look at Baker Mayfield's stats, for real. Like, 16 for 23 for 156 yards. They scored 34 points.
But they didn't throw, but we all know.
But, I mean, even the Baltimore Ravens.
I'm not gonna say we all know.
Yeah.
I know that Cleveland really isn't a team that they emphasize the run.
Yeah, and even that, like, you would say Nick Chubb.
They don't care if Baker Mayfield only throws for under 200
yeah.
yards.
Yeah, and I'm with
because
you.
Because the bread and butter is that run game.
Yeah, so if you look at the run game, even that, all right, so Chubb had a good game. He had 108 yards, right? So good game. Nothing for 34 points, nothing eye-catching. For 34 points, you would think that it was way more than that. Hunt only had 46 yards rushing and only averaged 2.9 yards a carry. You put your like Ray Lewis said this with the Baltimore Ravens. He said this back when Dilfer and I want to say Tony Banks or whoever were the quarterback. He was like, dude, just don't turn the ball over and we'll be fine. Like he said, like for his defense, just don't turn the ball over and we'll be fine. It, even depending on what your defense can do, but so much if you're and I'm not this is this and like Ray said, this is not the Baltimore Ravens defense, the Chicago Bears defense. No one said they were that defense. They said they were a good defense. if you put a good defense in that situation, they're going to give up points. On a consistent basis, you turn the ball over left and right.
I understand what you're saying. You're saying that this isn't that defense, but you couldn't tell me after the first week that people weren't saying that this is the potential to be a great defense, an all-world defense.
Folks are saying they get sacks.
Isn't that what we heard resoundingly from people in this demographic after that week one victory against the Philadelphia Eagles?
I wasn't saying that. I was saying that they gave them 17 points initially, so it wasn't like, again, they're the Baltimore Ravens. But they were saying this defense, and they said that this defensive front seven could be a problem. That's all they were saying. And to be honest with you, Chase Young got knocked out the game. But you still saw Montez Sweat. You saw Jonathan Allen. So they did what they typically do. They did bring pressure to the quarterback. So they did what I think many people have thought. Like, and you know, everybody goes kind of crazy and says, "Oh, like, all right, they're world beaters." But at the end of the day, like, it's a good defense. And Ray said this, and I think you alluded to it too. This is not the Baltimore Ravens defense. This isn't the Chicago Bears defense in the 80s. This is a good defense. That's all it is. But you can't put even the good defense, the better defense, is a defense better than this. You can't turn the ball over consistently. And I'm even talking about you're changing the field. Like, you're literally changing the whole field and you're starting, your offense is starting basically already in field goal range. You're going to give up points.
Yeah, you're going to give up points for 34,
yes. Like, and you're going to get tired. Yes, you will. If you're getting three and outs, if you got three and outs and you turn the ball over, yes, you will. Because even the best defenses get tired. And the Baltimore Ravens have a great – I mean, again, it's not the Chiefs. But the Baltimore Ravens, if you – like, even against the Chiefs, they got tired. Like, you get a defense tired, you're going to give up points.
I hear you.
Yeah. I'm saying if you're on the field forever, right? If you're on the field, don't defenses usually give up points? All the time. If you're on the field,
they do.
Yes, I'm saying that's what happens. So I'm saying in this situation, like, this offense isn't helping them out. Like, this offense is not. Dwayne is not helping them out. We've seen for 3 weeks, even the Eagles game, how many three and outs have we seen? A lot. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know.
I'll tell you this.
I have the red zone, so yeah. I can't say I watched a lot of this football.
I will tell you a lot, Will. Like, a lot. There's a lot of three and outs, and this defense is on the field a lot. The Arizona Cardinal game, they were on there a lot. Like, I'm just saying, like, you got to help them out. They're not running a ball control offense. They're trying to air it out. So, I mean, it's either you got to change. There's two things you got to do. You either got to change your identity or try to create an identity in terms of being a ball control team, or Dwayne got to get better. Because you want Dwayne to air it out, then you don't get the same product, bruh. You know what I'm saying? So it is with.
Can I just say real quick that Dwayne doesn't have to be great? I know we're getting ready to talk about him in a second.
Mm-hmm.
But you referenced Baltimore earlier. You referenced Baltimore a lot.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Your upcoming opponent, too. What's interesting is, years later, after Ray Lewis said what he said to, you mentioned Tony Banks and
Trent Dilfer.
Ed Reed said to Joe Flacco, just don't lose the game.
Yeah.
He got you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically saying, Dwayne, you don't have to be great.
You don't.
Just manage the game. I told you, his job is going to be in jeopardy regardless, because Alex Smith can come in to this offense, theoretically, based on his history. I've said this time and time again. And he can win games while you play strong defense.
Mm-hmm.
He can keep the chains moving. Dwayne has to get mentally tougher. We'll talk about it shortly, I know.
Yeah, so it gets to that point then, you know, should this team look for a different option now at quarterback? You got Rivera already talking like there's a cutoff point with Dwayne. Rivera's already stated that. Like, one, I make it a two-parter. One, what's the cutoff? And two, you know, should it be ASAP? I'll start with Ray.
Well, Ron Rivera pointing out where Dwayne is in his career is definitely accurate. You know, many quarterbacks experience growing pains early in their careers. Peyton Manning, for example, he threw 28 picks in his rookie season while playing under your man, Jim Moore. Playoffs! shout out to my man, Tim Durant, George Templeton. I mean, he pointed out on Twitter how far Dwayne has come in comparison to last season when Jay Gruden, who didn't want to draft him, pretty much ruined him to some degree. And I believe it just based on what we've seen on all season reports, DJ Swearing, the text messages. Dwayne has had to overcome a lot in his young career. He's still pretty much a rookie, and that's what Ron Rivera was saying. And also, you have a young receiving core who's also still learning. You have an offensive front who's not the best. He's not always the most well-protected. So he's got a lot of hurdles to overcome. However, my biggest concern, as I just mentioned, is Dwayne's confidence. I pointed out on Twitter Sunday that, you know, he was seen biting his nails and you know, looking nervous on the sideline. I'm like, dude, fixing the mental blocks is going to be largely up to you. Like, no coach can do that. Yeah. And in terms of what's the tipping point, the Rams game would be the tipping point for me, because if you lose to the Ravens and the Rams, that drops you to 1-4.
Yeah.
I feel like Ron Rivera, if you're listening, coach, learn from your former team in Chicago, who they may have rolled with Trubisky for too long.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a similar situation with a strong defense.
Well, T.
Okay. I'll say this. What year is Dwayne Haskins in?
This is year officially? This is year two. You can call it year two.
Year two.
Mm-hmm.
How many starts has he had?
Man, I want to say, I don't have it. Like, it's not even
about
a
nine?
Yeah, about nine, ten. It's not even a
close to nine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the thing that troubles me about this demographic and this fan base and the media in this area. The man hasn't even had a full season to have the ups and downs, the trials and tribulations of being a starting NFL quarterback. Now, do we know that he is very flawed? Yes. But there's also another quarterback that was drafted very highly, who was coming out of college, was very flawed. And for these first three games, he's starting to turn it around in his third year. And that guy I'm referring to is Josh Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Are there a lot of similarities between Dwayne Haskins and Josh Allen? Absolutely. Both of them had very strong arms coming out of college. Mm-hmm. Both of them had inaccuracy issues. And both of them are very big quarterbacks who can move outside the pocket to extend plays. And both of them, quite frankly, one of the cons about them coming out of the combine and coming out of college was the potential inability of them to read the field quickly and digest the NFL defense pre-snap. So I say all of that to say this. Give him some time. I know that, you know, in D.C. they love the second most important person besides the president in D.C. is the backup quarterback. But give Dwayne Haskins some time. Allow him to go through his trials and tribulations, the ups and downs. Start to develop a game plan that fits to his skill set and his strong suit. We saw numerous young quarterbacks come into the league, and their coach, the offensive coordinator and quarterback coach, they played to their strength by cutting the field in half. That's one of the things you can do to help speed up Dwayne Haskins' learning curve, is cutting the field in half. Make it where his reads are on one half, and then he progresses to the second half of the field, rather than him having to go high to low on his read, on his progression reads. That's one. Two, you need to improve the offensive line. Three, you really need to establish a guy who can be a number two for you, so you can really evaluate Dwayne Haskins. I think it's too small of a sample size for us to say you have to bench him at this point of the season.
See, the Josh Allen's a good example in terms of passing, but Josh Allen is way more athletic than Dwayne. And that's the thing he can get away with, because Josh Allen is very athletic. And this is what I think too, that it's unfair for Dwayne, because Wilty, to your point about when you use Buffalo as an example, they didn't put all of it on Dwayne, right? Because Buffalo had a good defense, and also they ran the football. They weren't asking for Josh Allen to make all the throws and also they asked him, and they took advantage of his athleticism by using him on design run plays. So it wasn't like, hey, Josh Allen, sit back there and, you know, and dissect the defense. And on the flip side, you got Dwayne. It's like you're asking for him to do so much. And really, he's just not at that level. And I've always used an example of some of the other teams out there that, you know, if you want your quarterback to learn and also win at the same time, or, you know, try to win games at the same time, like, there's nothing wrong with being a manager. You know what I'm saying? Like, lean on the running game, plays that, you know, lean on the defense, and make plays when you have to, right? And utilize play action, because it simplifies things, right? So, like, you know, Dwayne's not at this particular point where he can air it out. Like, he's a accurate 300 yard passer with about a 65% completion rate. He's not that dude right now. So why not lean elsewhere? So that's why it puzzled me when certain folks were cut and released, where you could have made it easy on Dwayne to kind of grow within the process. That's why, I mean, I do like the Josh Allen example, because I think Buffalo did that. They didn't ask for Josh Allen to take the steps until, like, all right, they saw it towards the end of the season where he was improving as a passer. Then, you know, they added Stephon Diggs, so they added more weapons, you know what I'm saying, with Josh Brown. So now it's okay, we have weapons on the outside, and he's already kind of taking the next step. So I would have liked a different process for Dwayne. Like, all right, you know what I'm saying, we've already built this team a certain way, and let's kind of simplify things for Dwayne. And I don't think this team is doing that for him. So if you're going to use this formula, then you're setting him up for failure. And then to me, it's like, when you're looking at a locker room, right, and it's always about the locker room, you got guys busting their ass and they balling out, but then, okay, they're put in jacked up situations because of a turnover. Because of the way you're coaching it, then you open the door to say, hey, Dwayne, you may not be the guy to run our offense.
That's a fair point, but, you know, I think far too often the easy thing for us, because, look, if we're all being truly honest, football is the sport that most people love, but we absolutely know nothing about.
Right? Facts. Yes, facts. I agree.
Because we don't know, we don't know what his primary reads are.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what he's supposed to do against a certain defense. And most of the time, 9 times out of 10, we don't really know what the defense is, right? So for us to say, to put it all on Dwayne Haskins, I think that's the easy way out.
Yeah.
What you need to do is you need to say, okay, Scott Turner, Ron Rivera, you know that this guy isn't at the place within his career, within his progression, where he can do a lot of the things that you want out of your star, your typical star quarterback, pocket star quarterback that plays in the pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So what can you do? What does he do well? You take what he does well, and you build packages around that. Kind of like, I don't know, what Kyle Shanahan and Mike Shanahan did for Robert Griffin III.
Yeah.
What they also did for Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
What Jay Gruden did for Kirk Cousins on certain occasions, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look around the league, look at Russell Wilson's progression as a passer.
Lamar.
Look at Lamar Jackson's progression. Look at Deshaun Watson. Look at Cam Newton. Look at Aaron Rodgers. Right. You look at Josh Allen. We name all these quarterbacks, and what did their coaching staff do early in their career? They put them in the best position to succeed by tailoring the offense to their strength. That's what we have to. That's what Ron Rivera and Scott Turner need to do.
No,
plain and simple.
Yeah, I agree. Let's go to the Ravens game. The Washington football team have the Ravens next. What are the keys for the Washington football team not to get blown out? I ain't gonna say it's a victory for them not to get blown out, because they're gonna lose this game. They're gonna lose this game.
The standard is really low. You really lowered the standard. Yep. I'll let Ray take this.
Yeah, I noticed that when I saw the production. I was like, wow, he's not even giving them a chance. It's simple. It's very simple, though. Protecting Dwayne, minimizing turnovers, and sustaining drives. The defense this season is strong enough, despite injuries, to keep you competitive. Mm-hmm. But the Ravens will wear you out quickly, as is all the turnovers bringing out.
Easily.
Point blank.
Easy. Will T?
A couple things.
All right.
You have to put him in a – you have to put certain reads in the offense where he's able to pick up the blitz. Because if, you know, anyone who saw that game yesterday against the Chiefs
– whew, man –
or at least be able to recognize them.
Yeah.
They were bringing blitzes from everywhere. They had guys coming, you know, from the right linebacker spot, looping all around and blitzing around to the left end, right? So you got to put them in to put certain reads in the offense where, you know, whether it's motion, whether it's motioning the guy out, whether him going with an enhanced snap count to try to get those guys to tell, you know, where to blitz or what type of defense they're playing. You got to do something to put him in a comfortable position. That's one. Two, unless you're down by like 14 or 20 points, and we know that the Ravens can easily get up on you, you can easily score a lot of points through the air with Lamar Jackson and the weapons that he has, you got to put Dwayne Haskins in the best situation to run the ball.
Yeah.
Consistent. You got to stay with it.
I agree.
And three, you got a lot of injuries along that defensive line.
Yeah.
And we know what the Ravens love to do, which is run the ball. So that defense could be in for a very long day if they don't start Mark Ingram, J.K. Dobbins, and Gus Edwards from pounding the rock and getting 4 to 5 yards to carry.
Yeah. I think Dwayne shouldn't – I mean, turn the football over, that's everybody, not just Dwayne. Special teams, quarterback play, you know, fumbles, whatever you want to call it, can't turn the football over. They're going to miss Matt Ioannidis, who's out for the season. Chase Young has a groin injury, but it doesn't look as serious as folks thought initially. So maybe Chase Young has an opportunity to play in that game. If he can play, obviously try to put pressure on Lamar Jackson if you can. But the Chiefs had a good game plan about keeping folks wide and trying to funnel things in the middle. And the good thing about this Washington football team is that if you watch them last, you know, throughout the three games of the season, their interior with Deron Payne and Ioannidis, obviously, but he's out. But Deron Payne and Jonathan Allen have put pressure up the middle. So, you know, hopefully kind of use that game plan. If they can kind of contain him in the pocket, obviously, to me, that they're going to lose containment every once in a while. I mean, it's Lamar Jackson. He's that special. But if they can not, if they don't turn the football over, I mean, I could see them being in the game in the first, second quarter. Third quarter, it's a whole different beast. I think second half, you know, this Raven team turns it on. But, like, it's just a bad matchup, man. It really is. After you watch what Kyler Murray, how you have to, you know, deal with him. But this is a different animal in Lamar Jackson with that speed. And they do have, you know, they have speed demons on the outside. But, yeah, it's a situation. But I do think if they stop the run game, which I think they're capable of, they've done it throughout this, other than the Cleveland game, they've done it throughout. They've done a good job stopping the opponents in the run game. They can do that. I just don't know if they can contain Lamar. I think it's all on Lamar. I think Lamar can have a spectacular game against this thing. All right, man. We'll preview the NBA Finals between the Lakers, Heat after break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Thing.
The Aegis.
You dig?
Deuces.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Wole, Ray Jeezy, now part of SportsJourney.com. All right. Game one of the NBA Finals begins tomorrow night between the Miami Heat and the LA Lakers. So many different storylines. LeBron James versus the Heat and Coach Spoelstra. Kentucky's Anthony Davis versus Bam Adebayo. Jimmy Butler possibly leading the Heat to a championship and winning a championship, obviously, for Black Mamba. What's going to happen in this series? I'm going to start with Will T.
I think the Heat win in seven.
In seven? Why do you think that?
I think Miami has, you know, defensively, this is a team that does well for long stretches of time, closing out on outside shooters. This is a team that also does a great job with packing the lane, which is something that we know LeBron loves to do, even though he's really developed a good jump shot from three.
Yeah.
And third, I personally believe that Coach Eric Spoelstra and the Miami Heat coaching staff will be 100% comfortable with allowing Anthony Davis and LeBron James to score at will. I'm not going to say at will. They'll be contested. Mm-hmm. They'll gladly allow them to score. But what they won't do is they won't allow a lot of open outside shots from, as Shaq calls them, the others, which are Rondo, Kyle Kuzma, Danny Green.
He's trash.
Alexis Caruso.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the players on the Lakers. I really believe that Anthony Davis and LeBron James are going to get 30, maybe 30 plus each, each game. But the other guys on that team, they're going to have a very hard time getting up shots because they'll have very few uncontested shots.
Ray Jeezy, you next.
Y'all remember growing up when we used to hoop every day in the summertime?
Mm-hmm.
And on some of those days, you may not have a lot of people outside.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, let's play 2-on-2. You can play 2-on-2 for hours.
Yeah.
And I like the 2-on-2 matchup between LeBron and AD and Jimmy Buckets and Bam Bam. I mean, that's dope. Like, we could debate that alone. Like, who will win a 2-on-2 matchup with those guys? Obviously, you would lean toward, you know, LeBron and AD. However, just piggybacking on what Will said, it comes down to as the most effective supporting cast.
Mm-hmm.
Duncan Robinson, Jay Crowder, Hero, Iguodala, Rondo, KCP, Kuzma, Dwight. I mean, Dwight was huge. And closing out Denver, obviously. Rondo knocking down open shots, playing excellent defense, making the right passes.
Mm-hmm.
Who I'm worried about is Kuzma on the Lakers. I'm really concerned about him. However, when you factor in Dwight, Rondo, and Danny Green, I give the edge to the Lakers defensively, and I just feel like they'll impose their will, and that's why I'm going with the Lakers in the finals. And as much as I'm intrigued by this coaching matchup, by the way, because remember when Vogel was the head coach at Indiana Pacers back in the PG and Hibbert days, a lot of pundits thought he outcoached Spoelstra back then.
Mm-hmm.
Spoelstra just had the more talented team with the big three. Now it seems like Spoelstra has evolved, and it seems as though he may have the edge in the coaching matchup. So I'm intrigued by that. But again, it comes down to talent, and I just feel like from that perspective, and again, defense, the Lakers have the edge, and they'll win it.
Yeah, Miami has a more of organic, you know, organic way of, you know, playing basketball. It's not like derived on, you got to be, you're the star, you got to get the ball. Folks get touches when they're open. It's refreshing, right? It's a nice style of offense. I have issues where, because they've leaned on their zone in this postseason run. It's been effective against certain teams. It's been very effective. The Boston started figuring out to a certain extent and getting, you know, guys open for three. They weren't knocking them down consistently, but they found some holes in the zone. So you know they're going to go zone. So my thing, and if you look at the zone and how it was getting cracked when they set a screen and a screen, they set a screen in the top, and then sometimes they would set a screen where somebody's in the free throw line and that person would set the screen, and then Jason Tatum would navigate for a layup. They can't afford to do that with the Lakers and give up layups like that. You know what I'm saying? You still got to make AD and LeBron work for buckets. I get what Will's saying. Let the others beat you, but you got to make them work. Like, you can't give up layups, you know what I'm saying? Like, easy layups. Because they go that zone, they're going to give up some easy points. They'll have shooters open because it's that or LeBron and AD are getting layups. You know what I'm saying? So I want to see how long they stay in the zone. That's my thing. I want to see, because it's been very effective in this run. Like, Milwaukee has been effective against Milwaukee. It's effective against the Pacers. And to Boston, to a certain extent, it was effective early. It started wearing down towards the end of the series. But like Will said, they do challenge shots. You got to give them credit. Like, they hustle and they play a brand of basketball. And Eric Spoelstra has become a phenomenal coach. You know, we used to, like, I used to trash this dude, but he's become a phenomenal coach.
Now, don't say we.
I said we was about to flip out. I know, bro. I know you didn't. I never trashed. That's facts. But I just think that, you know, they've had an advantage with Bam, like, in most of these series. And Bam and AD are intriguing because AD, what Bam does in terms of with the ball, AD can slide his feet. This is a different dude. Like, he can slide his feet and he'll be there. You know what I'm saying? So I want to see how effective Bam is going to be on those ISO plays when he has to create, because AD can slide his feet. He'll be at the spot. We're talking about an all-world defender checking Bam, and it's able, when Bam's trying to cross over, able to get there. It won't be like playing against Tice and folks like that. AD will be there, and he has the length to bother that shot. So, like, that advantage is gone in that aspect, or should be gone. Who knows? Maybe Bam balls out. And you're looking at Jimmy Butler. You do expect Jimmy Butler to be Jimmy Butler, because, I mean, the dude is tenacious. This dude scores baskets. But I just think the matchup, the way it matches up, and what the Lakers produce with LeBron and AD, and because they will impose their will, the others will get open, especially when they go to that zone. The others will get open. So I actually have the series going down in 5, L.A.
Okay.
But this is my question. I have a question for y'all. I have a question for y'all. Do y'all think, because this is what I struggle with, do you think Miami's better than Denver? So, like, do you honestly think Miami is better than Denver?
A different style of play.
I know,
I think they're tougher.
You think they're tougher?
I think Denver has superior talent.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a difference between having superior talent and every guy on that team knowing their role and playing their role extremely well, which Miami does, which Miami plays an incredible brand of team basketball.
They do.
Anytime you have four guys that can average 20 points in a series, it really makes it hard for a team to hone in on one guy defensively, where we know in seven game series, that's what teams want to do.
Mm.
They want to hone in on one guy during the last 5 or 6 minutes of a game and try to stop him, because they know that improves their odds of winning the game. When you have that one or two guys you go to, whereas Miami, there are four guys who legitimately can score 20, and everyone else will play off of him.
Mm-hmm.
because it's a truly a team first concept.
It is a team. I believe that it is definitely a team first concept. That's what I like about the team that Spo has put together. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene now, part of Sports Journey. Let's go to a team that I mentioned, Denver. A team that Denver knocked off. A situation that's happened in L.A. With the Clippers. Doc Rivers will no longer be the coach of the Clippers. What does that mean for the Clippers? Because a couple players went there because of Doc Rivers, supposedly. And also, what's next for Doc? I'll start with Will.
You want to take it first?
Will, I'll start with you.
I'm okay with the Doc firing, by the way. Steve Ballmer wants to win now, and his organization has shown a win now culture.
Mm-hmm.
Trade in for Doc Rivers himself. They traded the future away for PG and Kawhi. It's just Doc, he failed with this group, mm-hmm. and he failed with the group consisting of CP and Blake. He's blown multiple 3-1 leads. I believe there's no debate about whether he should have been fired or not. The fun thing to analyze and debate really is who's going to be the replacement. In my opinion, IMO. Sam Cassell looks like the guy, bro.
Ooh, that'd be a good one. I forgot about Sam. I thought he would go elsewhere.
That's a good suggestion, but I just don't believe Steve Ballmer will turn over this team to a guy who's largely unproven as a coach in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
especially when you have Tyronn Lue on the bench right beside him, a guy who's won a championship, who's coming to a high-stakes situation where it's clearly win now, where there's star players involved, and a short timeline, and he's won a championship. So I really believe Tyronn Lue will be the next head coach of the Los Angeles Clippers.
That's why I said it'd be fun to debate. Go ahead, though.
So the question, but back to the question was, do I agree with the firing?
Mm-hmm.
I'll put an asterisk by it, because I thought about it some more after we had like our exchange via text yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
If Doc Rivers had a, you know, and Ray is 100% right. Doc Rivers has essentially underperformed as the head coach of the Los Angeles Clippers. You know, even with that Lob City team,
yeah,
with this team. But a guy with his resume should at least had the opportunity to start next season, and here's why. This team in the regular season performed. Now, they weren't the number one seed, but this team largely performed in the regular season, considering the injuries to Paul George and considering what you were doing with load management with Kawhi Leonard. Then you stop the season and you go into the bubble. And it's been reported, I don't know if it's fact, that the Clippers voted on numerous occasions to not go to the bubble and participate. You know, when the Milwaukee Bucks protested and we had that Wednesday off with no games.
Yeah.
I believe it was a Wednesday and Thursday, if I'm not correct. If I'm correct,
mm-hmm.
Where there were no games, that team, it was reported by Adrian Wojnarowski that team voted to leave the bubble.
Yeah.
And then I also, if I'm correct, believe that, if I heard correctly, prior to the start of the bubble, voted to not go to the bubble.
Oh, wow.
So a case could be made that team did not want to be there. Therefore, that team got the results that the Clippers got the results that they got. So I would have liked to have seen Doc Rivers at least had until, I don't know, 20 games, 25 games mm-hmm. into the next season, only because of, you know, what he's established there and the break in the season. I would have wanted to see what he could do with the first 20 games at least and got a vibe from there and then said, hey, we got to make a change.
Yeah.
But as both of you said, I don't necessarily disagree with the firing. It's mm-hmm. something that had to happen. But I want that caveat. I didn't like the way that, and no one gives a damn what I care about. I would have liked to have seen 20 more games. I'm just being honest.
Yeah, no, I know what you.
I don't sign a check.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked to see the 20 games headed into, and you know, at the start of next season, and seeing how the team reacted then.
Yeah, I like Doc. I've always been a Doc guy, and this season was a bad year. And I'm with Ray and with yourself. Like they underachieved with Lob City, and this season with this team. But I just like last season, you know, when they didn't have nobody, those dudes competed. You know what I mean? And you know they pushed. I wonder who they played in the playoffs. Was it Golden State in the postseason when they pushed somebody in the first? Was it Golden State? I can't think of who it was, but they didn't have anybody.
I can't think of who it is.
I want to say Golden State. I could be wrong. But like they you know, they had to fight. Like, the other squad had to fight, and they scrapped with, like, Lou Will and whatnot. And no one thought that team, because they traded everybody away, no one thought that team was going to make the postseason. And they damn near, you know, almost got out of the first round. So it's just like, you know he can coach. I mean, I know people like to, you know, to pile on Doc, you know, for not achieving what they thought he was going to achieve. But, you know, he's a good coach. And, you know, there's a lot of things that happened in the bubble, and certain players didn't step up. And Doc's going to get the blame for that. But sometimes when you're supposed to be a star, right? You know what I mean? Is, you know, you're supposed to step up. And I think Doc has gotten that blame. You know, people didn't get on the coaching staff when LeBron lost to the Dallas Mavericks. They got on LeBron. You know what I'm saying? Like, because he didn't step up. He played scared against the Dallas Mavericks. Well, in the series against the Denver Nuggets, they were up 3-1. And certain people were playing scared. You know what I mean? Didn't play to their capability. You like you said, they mortgaged the future to bring certain guys there. You know what I'm saying? I was watching. We talked about it before. I watched Game 7, and I saw stars being shook in Game 7 with open shots. So Doc schemed up for them to get open shots. Them dudes didn't step up. So it's just hard. Like, I get it. I get why people are frustrated. Like, he's up 3-1, and that's what you look at the coach. But you know what I'm saying? I'm not saying that Doc doesn't deserve the blame. He deserves partial blame. But also on the flip side, them players deserve some blame too, though.
And I'll say this. I don't necessarily think the changes are done with Doc Rivers.
Yeah.
Just being honest.
I feel you. I don't think so either. And it shouldn't be, to be honest with you.
I think a guy who was an all-star who they brought into town, I'll just be specific. I think Paul George, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw Paul George move this offseason.
Yeah, and I believe in Paul George, and I know that Kawhi has an opt-out clause, and I thought word was when he signed this deal that, you know, it was important that Doc was there. Like, that's one of the main reasons that he wanted to go to the Clippers. So I want to know how that works out, too. Like, I want to know if the mega team they put together will now, you know, fall apart because, you know, you got certain players that wanted to be there because of Doc. And also, to your point, Will T, like that one dude didn't perform and he could be on his way out. And then you got dissension within the team with Harrell, was it Harrell? How you say his name? Big man? Harrell?
Montrezl Harrell?
Yeah, Montrezl Harrell. Thank you. He's a free agent, so you got to pay up to keep him. So it may not be the same Clippers next year, to be real with you.
I think he's gone.
Yeah, exactly. So that what brought the fire to that squad, it may not be the same squad coming into next season. All right, man. The Charlo Twins did the damn thing. We'll talk about that after the break. Listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Ray Jeezy, Will T. And we are now part of Sports Journey, so make sure you check us out. All right, right now we have boxing expert Johnny Signorella on the line. What's up, Johnny?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? How you guys doing tonight?
We are good.
Doing great.
Thank you all for having me back.
All is well.
Oh, man, come on, Johnny. You know how we do it. We appreciate you for being on, man.
Right. Oh, man. I always love coming on with you guys. You guys know your sports, whether it's basketball, boxing, football, all that good stuff. And we had some great boxing this past weekend. The big-name fighters came back. You know, we had Jermall Charlo and Jermell Charlo in a great card. What was your guys' thoughts on that?
Oh, man, you're going to jump right into it, so I like to hear it. For me, that's what I love to hear. For me, I was impressed, man, and I'm on the side of the Charlo brothers. It's funny, like, these dudes don't get the respect that they deserve. Like, all they do is knock dudes out, and they fight at a high level, and it's to a point where now, like, hey, they need to put some respect on their names for that pound-for-pound list, because these boys are hungry.
I tell you what, Jermall looked so great to me against Devonchenko. I'm going to tell you a couple things that I observed. A great jab, obviously, but what I loved about what Jermall did is that he kept his right hand tucked to his chin and his elbow on his rib cage. And, you know, you had Devonchenko in front of him, but still when Jermall was throwing that jab, he was still moving side to side. Like, he was cognizant enough to understand that he has an opponent in front of him, and he baited him in. Started off real strong. Devonchenko usually is a slow starter. Comes on a little bit late, which he did. But I really liked what I saw from Jermall that night.
Jermall showed he had a chin.
Oh, it is chin.
Right.
He took some shots in that thing, man.
Right. That was the main thing I took from Jermall's fight. Go ahead, Will.
No, go ahead.
I just wanted to reference that. And in terms of Jermell, true or false, guys, Jermell is a better boxer. Rosario is a better fighter. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You want me to take it? I'll take it.
Yeah, take it, Johnny. Go ahead, take it.
Whoever.
Rosario was winning that fight.
Yeah.
But Jermell, I think that what happened with him, with that Tony Harrison loss, really elevated him to be very concentrated. And I also think it helped his brother to motivate both of them. Like, you know, even if you felt you won, the judges can screw you over, guys. This is boxing, you know, and the consequences are very high. So it got late in the fight, and if you saw, Jermell was taking more chances towards the end. And, yes, Jason was the better boxer on that evening, but Jermell was the better fighter. And that punch, a lot of people say this. They're like, oh, it's a jab to the body, but knocked down.
That was me.
But I'm telling you what's up, bro. You get hit to your solar plexus, right to the pit of your stomach after eight, you know, rounds of activity by a guy that's got power in both hands. Woo!
Oh, that was me. That was
that's
so
tough. You know, what I'm looking forward to is seeing what's next for both brothers. I think that they can definitely, you know, be future, you know, pound for pounders. You know, I think that, you know, for Jermall, we all want to see a Canelo, Triple G, Danny Jacobs, you know, Andrade, Murata fight. That would be great. But, you know, we have the network divide. But I think that because of this quarantine, maybe people, and this is in my perfect universe that I create sometimes, you know, in the perfect world, maybe they all decide, hey, we need to make money. We need to make things work, blah, blah, blah. You know, for Jermell, you know, he got his rematch win against Tony Harrison. Jared Hurd would be a good fight. The thing with Jermell is I think it's kind of sucked because if he moves to 160, it's almost like the same thing we have with the Klitschko brothers at heavyweight. Eventually, these guys are going to have to be pitted by the sanctioning bodies to fight each other. That's not going to happen. These guys love each other, man. Like, and that's what I like about them. Like, they have so much support and passion.
John, you mentioned two names as possible opponents for the twins that I want to discuss a little bit further. Jermell Charlo, the impressive win. What is the likelihood for to see him versus in a fight versus Jared Hurd?
Well, the likeliness would just be that it's all coming down to money, as always with boxing. I think that would be a very good fight. The likeliness, I mean, you know, they run in similar circles in terms of promotional outfits and all that kind of blah, blah, blah stuff I don't want to bore people with. But I think that that's probably the best one out there. I mean, we could run back Tony Harrison for a third time. That might be a good look. I mean, those were good fights. We saw what happened in the first one. And then we saw Jermell. What I got to say about what Jermell did in that fight, you know, was he just adapted, man. It was really awesome. It was a great look. And whenever you have to come back from adversity and make an adjustment as a fighter or anything in life, like get a new job, say, like we're all doing, or finding out new things, you got to give props to Jermell for doing that.
Okay. And Jermall, we all know, well, I don't know if people are aware of this, that Canelo Alvarez recently filed a complaint in court against DAZN and Golden Boy for a breach of contract. I don't know if he's essentially trying to get out of that contract with Golden Boy and DAZN. Do you think that if there's an impasse and I'm not going to even say breaks away from Golden Boy and DAZN, if there's enough money and there's enough notoriety and requests from the fans for it, can we possibly see a Canelo Alvarez versus Jermall Charlo fight?
I think that's definitely possible. I think what's going on with DAZN right now, like everything that's happened in life right now, everything kind of got weird, and Canelo wanted to fight more. I honestly think that Canelo wanted to fight a lot more this year, and DAZN just doesn't have the dates or whatever the requirements are for, you know, testing for COVID and all that kind of stuff. So long story short, all the things that we know about what's going on in the world right now, I think that Canelo is just kind of really upset with Golden Boy Promotions and DAZN. He got a great contract but the contract was for him to fight regularly and make a certain amount of money. So I believe strongly that Canelo is trying to get out of that contract to make these type of fights. I don't think Canelo's a ducker. I don't think he's the type of guy that wouldn't want to fight a Charlo. And I think that's one of the best fights at 160. Let's face facts, all right? Let's look at things. Triple G is a little bit long in the tooth. He's not the same guy he used to be. And, you know, it's been a while since he's been in the ring. Danny Jacobs, as much as I love him, has great strength. And I love his story, man. He came back from cancer. They told him he was never going to walk again. Look what he did. My goodness. Incredible. You know, Ryota Murata is a good one there. Demetrius Andrade, who I know on a personal level, and I think he's a really great guy, great personality, and also a great talent. But if they're going to do anything at 160, I think that Charlo and Canelo, in my opinion, is the best fight at 160. Do I think it can happen? Absolutely, because the money will be there.
Guys, I hear the passion in your voice, and there's buzz coming from this discussion based on the events that took place this last weekend and based on what you guys want to see, including myself. I'm saying you guys. But I want to get your opinion. I'm going to start with Will and then Johnny, of course, jump in, Wole, whenever. There's been some constructive criticism about Al Haymon and how he planned this event. Many felt as though this should have been free. It should have been on Fox to, again, display the Charlo brothers to a large audience. Or he should have lowered the pay-per-view price considering we're in the midst of a pandemic. And we don't know the numbers yet, but there are many estimates that the numbers are somewhere around 100,000 buys, which would be horrible. That's Terrence Crawford numbers. What do you think that means? What do you think that means for upcoming bout for the Charlo brothers with all these guys you're throwing out there? We're throwing out Herd, Demetrius Andre. What would happen if this fumbled promotion, you know, potentially impact a future bout for both or one of the Charlo brothers?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. You hit the nail on your head right there with everything you were just saying. I think it was overly priced. Now, excuse me. What we have going on in the world, obviously, there's no fans in attendance. And the Charlo brothers, they're very good. And a lot of people are accustomed to making certain money. So they have to find a way to get these guys paid contractually or whatever their agreement was to fight underneath contracts. And what happens here is that they got to figure out a solution. There's no concessions. There's no buying. People buying. No one's buying beer in the stands. Excuse me again. No one's, you know, doing anything because it's just them in the bubble, as it's called. So you basically, I think it was a little overly priced. I'm on the flip side. I'm on both sides of the fence, I should say, is that I get where they're coming from a business perspective. And these guys deserve to get paid. Anyone that steps in the ring, you know, and they fought, you know, their butts off, guys. So, you know, there's no doubt. And then there's another side where it's like, yes, we are in a pandemic. Money's tough. People are out of work. We all know the story. $75, when I saw that, I was like, ouch. All right, that's kind of heavy. But then, you know, I looked at the card. I watched it, and I really enjoyed it. I think 4 out of the 6 fights were excellent. I'd like to see the Charlos keep doing their thing. I really do think that they are highly motivated of late, more so, not that they never had been, but I saw something in both those guys that they were always in the fight, always electric, always focused, and they're fighting during pandemic. They're fighting when, look, we mentioned before, Canelo, Triple G, a lot of guys. Where they been? These are the guys that are in boxing that maybe not be household names, but for the diehards, they're certainly household names, right? Mm-hmm. And so therefore, it's like the fact that they're even willing to do that, they deserve to get paid.
Well, Johnny, I think you covered everything. I think one thing that we tend to forget is there were six fights on this card, usually with a pay-per-view. And these were 6 high-level fights. These weren't just, you know, two co-features and 4 fights that are relatively
uncompetitive and lower level boxers. We got six quality, we got six, what we should have been, or depending on your opinion, six quality fights. So I don't necessarily think the licensing fee that he would have received from Fox or Showtime would have been enough to cover for all of the fighters for this card. So that's why he probably, Al Haymon probably decided to put it on pay-per-view. So I think it was purely economics for one. And two, I think he wanted to start to get the Charlo brothers into that, to get the boxing fans into that mindset that the Charlos are box office, they are pay-per-view fighters. And that's something that if he did that now, and despite what the numbers are, is something that he'll try to continue to do with these two guys going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think that every once in a while they're going to throw out a freebie, and I totally understand your point. And I looked at both sides of this point, is that, it would be great, like, say, for example, if they put it on Fox or they put it on just regular Showtime or whatever, that would be great exposure for those guys. And a lot of people would have tuned in and been like, wow, these guys are excellent fighters. But it's like, the pay-per-view just attracts the diehard, it just brings in. But I think that if talent is great, there's YouTube shares, there's Twitter shares. Everyone saw the knockout, when Jermell set down Rosario, and that pretty much went viral, all that type of stuff. So when good is good, it could become great. So if you're that good, I think people will just get it just the same.
Quick question.
Yep.
Do you think also that the fact that the Charlo brothers main event, or their pay-per-view, was a product of heavy competition? You had MMA, you had UFC that night as well. You had the NBA with the Western Conference Finals. So is that lean you more toward maybe a freebie on Fox? Because that's the way to get the audience to come away from some of these other big events. Because as you know, we love UFC, the big following. So what is your thoughts, just really quick, on the competition that the Charlo brothers pay-per-view was up against that night?
Well, that's a great question. And there's a lot going on too with baseball right now. Mm-hmm. We're getting into the playoffs and watching the Yanks against the Indians right now and all that good stuff.
Who's winning?
All that stuff is definitely competition against each other. The UFC has been putting on very strong main events for the most part, with, if you follow the sport like you do, with strong names and great matchups. This was the first time, I believe, during quarantine, not that there hasn't been good, strong boxing events, but this was the first time where it felt like, all right, this is real boxing. This is like marquee names, great matchups. And like you had mentioned before, the six fights on the card, they were great on paper. Two of them kind of were like a little bit of a bust, but four of them were really entertaining. I was on the edge of my seat for four of the six. That's great matchmaking. So I think that if boxing does that, it will not be affected by being swayed from viewers to look the other way.
Awesome.
So, John, I did want to go back to something you said. Is anybody saying that Canelo is scared? Because I've never viewed Canelo as somebody who's scared of the competition or ducking anybody. I've never viewed Canelo that way.
Can you run that back one more time?
I'm sorry.
I lost audio here.
Sorry. So is the talk that Canelo is ducking competition? Because I've never looked at Canelo as an individual who would duck competition. He's always been for fighting the big fight, typically.
Oh, absolutely. He doesn't duck. I mean, the thing about Mayweather, and I'm a big Floyd fan. Floyd picked him at the right time because Canelo had the BALLS to fight Mayweather at that time, and Floyd was very smart to pick Canelo at that young age when he did and just take him to school. But if you look, I mean, Canelo has fought just about everyone, and I think that he would still do it right now, and I think that's part of the problem with what's going on with Golden Boy, is that he's saying, hey, I want to fight, I want to earn, I want to get my legacy. I think that Canelo is a tremendous fighter. I think he has flaws. I think there was times where obviously we've seen him before in the past, where he won questionable, you know, decisions. But I think he's determined, and I always think he's trying to improve.
Definitely. Well, Johnny, how can folks check out your content? How can they reach you on social media?
Okay, so I got something called the Life Network right now.
Okay.
You can find me everywhere, Audio Boom, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, all that good stuff. At Boxing Music John on Twitter. I appreciate you guys for the plug. Mm-hmm. Recently, we had some great actors on, some NFL players. Tomorrow, I got another NFL player on that just smashed records. And I'm just so excited to branch out and do what you guys are doing. Mm-hmm. You guys do a great job. I mean, you guys talk all sports. You cover everything.
Thanks, Johnny. We appreciate it. And you know we appreciate it.
Yeah, man. That's the way to do it, you know, and that's what keeps people entertained. And hopefully this was entertaining for everyone, and I appreciate you guys for always reaching out to me. And I love coming on the show, fellas. You guys are awesome.
Oh, definitely. And, John, we're going to plan another roundtable discussion. Right, Ray?
Yeah.
Another roundtable discussion. So we're going to do that again.
Oh, I can't wait.
Okay, my man. I know you.
You let me know when. You know I'm going to be there.
We know. This time we'll have Will there, too. This time Will going to be there, too. So we'll have everybody. You know what I mean? All the boxing ahead of the tables. At the head of the table. You know what I mean? So it'll be great. Hey, Johnny, thanks for being on, man. We appreciate you.
Anytime, man. I'll come.
All right.
Let me know and I'll show up.
All right, definitely. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
All right, thank you, man.
Anytime.
Again, that was boxing expert Johnny Signorella. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Boxing Music John. All right, man. Usually we would talk about, you know, our NFL picks, but I'm going to let you all know that you can catch our NFL picks at www.footballgarbagetime.com. You can see our standings. You can see our Week 4 picks, and you can see what pick I have in the Survivor League. So, because I'm the only one remaining from the team. All right, man. Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. And then check us out at sportsjourney.com. That's the one of the new homes of the Urban Sports Scene. Again, thanks for listening. You've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene
for ages.
Yeah, dig.
Deuces.
Hey, Mega, lead us out, big homie.